Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by Patreon listeners like you. If you would like to join their ranks, go to patreon.com/readthebard. That's patreon.com/RIPHEBARD. And follow Sherry on all the various social networks at readthebard. That's RIPHEBARD. And now, from the studios in San Diego, California, here's Sherry.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today I'm welcoming back an extremely talented and very busy man, Kevin J. Anderson. We're going to talk about his new books, his publishing, his readers groups, and whatever else come into our little heads. Hi, Kevin. Welcome back.
Are you saying we both have little heads? Come on.
No.
Hello, Sherry. Hello, everybody. It's good to be back on. I think this is maybe my fourth time on Sherry's show. I don't know. I'm always happy to be on, and Sherry's always a great host, and she usually remembers once a year to say, Kevin, why aren't you on my show again? So it's time to be on and time to talk about whatever other million things we've got going on. So.
It's usually one of those Facebook things that come up and say, remember when you had Kevin J. Anderson on your show? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I have to send him a note.
Well, I've always got something new coming out, whether it's one of my own novels or short story collections or something that our publishing house does or some comics projects, and be sure to ask me about the comics project I've got with Steve Sears coming up. And the thing is, I'm distractible. It's like when you feed our cats coffee beans in their cat food, and then they sort of bounce all over the place. And so I'll just keep talking until you interrupt me and, like, ask real questions, or until a caller comes in with a well-formulated and interesting question. But anyway, this is your show, Sherry. Why am I taking it over? You can talk. Go ahead.
No, I'm delighted. Well, first, we haven't seen you for about a year. You haven't been on. So I just wanted to ask, have you been to conventions? Because last time I talked to you, you were running yourself ragged going to them. Are you still doing that?
Well, it was kind of crazy. I'll have to in 2016, I ended up doing 22 conventions. These are big conventions, like Dallas Comic Con and Chicago C2E2 and New York Comic Con and Charlotte, North Carolina Comic Con. These are it used to be that San Diego Comic Con was like the big kahuna and the only one that people had to go to, and then it's sort of gone from, I guess I'm stating my age here, it's gone from AT&T or from Ma Bell to all the little Baby Bell phone companies all over the place. And now just about every major city has at least one comics pop culture convention at some point during the year. And we really kind of did a traveling road show where me and a bunch of my big-name author friends, as well as a bunch of my ambitious newer author, either students or the ones that we publish through our publishing house, we would go to these conventions and set up a big table, and we would meet the fans and be on tables and autograph books and network with each other. And that was just a huge and exhausting thing. In 2016, like I said, we did 22 conventions, and I added up the attendance and stuff, and we were in front of like 1.5 million people. So that was, that was sort of like a big rock band tour almost doing all that. And as you might guess, that sort of affected my writing a bit because it sucked up a lot of time for me to be writing books. And if you want to be a writer, you actually have to write books too. You can't just be the band that goes out playing the greatest hits and never comes out with a new album. So I've slowed down quite a bit in 2017. I've done maybe 7 or 8 of the conventions. I still love them. I really enjoy being with the fans, and some of the experiences I have with people coming up to me with just the stories they tell me of, here's where I was when I read this book, and some of them are exhilarating. And I've had like mothers introduce their kids to me saying, here's my son, and he was severely dyslexic, and he was in special education, and in fifth grade, and he still didn't know how to read, but then he made up his mind to read your Star Wars book, and he taught himself to read, and now he's an avid reader, and you know how that just gets you all choked up. And other times there are like veterans from Afghanistan coming in, and they got a battered old book, and they said that this is the book they were reading the night one of their buddies died on patrol, and you know, it's just meeting the fans. That's kind of what's really important, because writers often have this buffer that we write the books and we send them out and then other people read them. It's not like a band where you're performing in front of an audience all the time. But this does give us a chance to perform in front of the audience, to meet the fans, to shake their hands and get your picture taken and things. And that's really important. But I also have to write books too. And so slowed that down. I've got somebody else who is now running all of the big conventions for me, and I show up to selected ones that I choose to. In fact, I just yesterday confirmed I'll be at one called Planet City Comic Con in Kansas City. That's on February 16th, I think, next year. So that's kind of the first one that I've got coming up. We're taking a couple of months off so that I can write an 800-page fantasy novel, and I can write a couple of short stories and do a nonfiction book and run my publishing company and every 5 or 6 days or so walk down the hall and wave to my wife and then come back. And, you know, little things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure your wife likes to see you every once in a while.
Yeah, I think once every 2 weeks is probably not as much as she would like, so we'll see if we can do it more.
No. No, I feel for her.
Well, I mean, one of the things is that a phrase that I use is I say I've got I'm wearing too many hats and I don't have enough heads, and so I am doing all of the conventions like I was talking about, and I'm writing all kinds of books, and Rebecca and I run the Superstars Writing Seminar, which is a really big in-depth conference on like publishing and writing careers, and we're in our ninth year of that, I believe. That happens every February, and we get 120, 140 people signed up for that, so that's a big job. And then we're running our publishing house, Wordfire Press, which we do 3 to 5 books a month from me and reprints and from other new authors and working with editors, and I'm also the art director on that, and well, I just need more coffee. I'm getting exhausted just telling you what I'm doing.
You don't keep your coffee and your water and stuff right next to you when you do one of these things?
Well, I do. I mean, somebody suggested that I should just have the coffee pot connected to the computer, and I should wear a pair of Depends all day long so that I don't ever have to leave the keyboard. But that may be a little bit extreme.
Not pretty.
Yeah, that may be
a
little
extreme. That's not pretty, Kevin.
Well, and the thing is, and we've talked about this in other shows, that I'm actually not a writer that sits still in a chair in front of the keyboard. I do most of my writing when I'm out hiking. I live in Colorado, and there are a million wonderful hiking trails out in the mountains. And in fact, my brother-in-law and I just did a really epic 21-mile hike on the Colorado Trail through the mountains last month, and we just had a terrific time doing it. And I wrote 5 chapters by dictating into my recorder. So there we go, ping-ponging on a different subject again. You got to keep me under control, Sherry. I hope you have
a cool.
firm outline for this. Yeah, firm outline for
that's
this show. So
that's why it's called Chatting with Sherry. It's not called Gotta Be on Schedule with Sherry.
Yeah, lecturing to Sherry. There we go. So a couple of things I do want to mention, because I've one of my really favorite series that I work on, and of course everybody has their favorite, and if we get some callers calling in, they might want to talk about either my Seven Sons books or my Dune books or Star Wars books or X-Files or whatever, but one of my personal favorite series is the Dan Shamble Zombie PI series. It's sort of a goofy He's back from the dead and back on the case. It's in a world where all the monsters have come back. So there's he and his ghost girlfriend and his bleeding heart human lawyer partner solve crimes and take cases with mummies and vampires and werewolves and ghosts. And it's kind of goofy and slapstick. It's it's not The Walking Dead at all. It's more like Spaceballs and really humorous stuff. And I published the first four of those books through Kensington. But then I've sort of taken over the series on my own, and I've just now got the first new Dan Shamble book in a couple of years, which will be up for pre-order in about a week, and it's going to come out probably by December 1st that WordFire Press is publishing. And that has the very dramatic title of Tastes Like Chicken. So it's about a flock of demon-possessed feral chickens who are taking over the town and causing all kinds of havoc among the monsters. And it's sort of
that's why it's
laugh
a
out
foul
loud
case.
Yeah, it's his most foul
most
case
foul
ever.
Most foul case. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and when the chickens are striding down the streets, that they're poultry in motion, and you know, it's stupid comments like that. So, I just love this series. I write the giant space operas like The Dark Between the Stars and the Hellhole series with Brian Herbert and the Dune books. And sometimes you just like to be silly. Other people might say stupid, but I like that. And so Dan Shamble Tastes Like Chicken will be out in a couple of weeks. And though I do want to point out that if you're new to this or if you want to catch up some on the Dan Shamble stuff, I've written a bunch of short stories, like little individual cases that Dan Shamble and his crew solve. We put that together in a collection called Working Stiff, and because he's a dead guy and he's working, so Working Stiff.
Working Stiff. Huh?
And just as sort of, you know, like the free hors d'oeuvres or the free samples, that we're giving away that entire book of all of the Dan Shamble short stories we collected. Working Stiff, and you can get it for free if you sign up for my readers group. It's my website is wordfire.com, so if you go there and then sign up, you get a free copy of all of those Dan Shamble short stories so that you can read them and read them while you're drinking coffee so that you snicker and snort and coffee comes out your nose and you know all those wonderful things. And you know, I do the novels because they're all a bunch of big, complicated, and hilarious cases. But the short stories allow me to just do like one-offs. In fact, there's one of them in there where, again, I was telling you I do all these comic cons and conventions. And there's one story in there where Dan Shamble has to solve the murder of a 501st stormtrooper who was found dead with a stake pounded through his armor, and the only witness to the murder is a Klingon. And so if you're at all into the conventions and the cosplaying and the comic cons, that one story alone should sell you on Dan Shamble.
Aw, that's so cute. I love that idea. We do have a caller.
Oh, somebody's listening. Hooray. What's the caller got? Let's
hello,
hear the caller.
hello, caller. Could I have your name and where you're calling from, please? Hello?
We have a quiet caller.
Yeah, they're not responding, so I'll try. There's
well, maybe he's busy
caller.
Reading the new Dan Shamble stories, and so he's just
maybe
so
engrossed. Maybe he's already signed up, Kevin.
Okay, good. All right, well, if we get the caller, I'd be happy to chat with the caller. So if not, we don't want dead air.
Oh, they disappeared.
Maybe it was just a sales call. They were trying to come in and ask me if I was happy with my phone service or something like that. So anyway,
was it? They're trying to find out whether do you use AT&T?
Well, I try not to use the phone whenever I can because that interrupts my work day. But we go for that. So let's see. We've got. The other book I've had out recently is I collected all of the Dune short stories that I wrote with Brian Herbert, and we put those stories together. I think there's seven of them, eight of them. I don't remember what it is. We put those together that WordFire Press also published, and that's called Tales of Dune. And you can find that on trade paperback or hardcover if you like nice hardcover books, or ebook if you just like to read them. So that's my other plug for the recent book that's coming out, because we've written, 15. I'm sorry, I didn't do my homework to actually write down all these numbers. I think we've done 15 Dune books over the years, and this one just collects all the short stories. And so if you want all the pieces, you can do that. Our last Dune novel that just came out in paperback is called Navigators of Dune, and that wraps up a trilogy, which is the origin of all of the Bene Gesserit Sisterhood and the Mentat School and the Spacing Guild and the Navigators, none of which means anything if you haven't read Dune, but, you know, is there a person on the planet who hasn't read Dune? If not,
I think everybody who's a science fiction fan has read Dune.
Yeah, it's my favorite science fiction book of all time, and I have read it many times, and in fact, I just reread it about 2 months ago, and each time I read it, I go, oh, I didn't notice that before. That connects to something else, and he was a pretty smart guy, so.
Yeah, did you ever read a book, and it's one of your favorites, and you go back, and it was like there was foreshadowing in it that you've read it like three times, and you never noticed it? I've done that a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, Dune is one of these that it's almost like it's got a dozen different layers in it, and you can read it, and each time you read it, it's like you're a fossil hunter, and you've scraped over one more layer of the rock, and you reveal another set of fossils in there. And like when I first read Dune, when I was, I think, 11 or so, I was just reading as an adventure story. I mean, this noble son who gets overthrown, and he's out hiding in the desert with his mother, and they get attacked by sandworms, and he joins the Fremen, and they overthrow the evil empire. And it was a great action story. And then I read it again when I was in college and went, oh, wow, there's all this politics in here and religion and economics. And the more times I read that, the more times I see even more connected things. And in fact, I remember when I was in college, it was like the mid 80s, so we were well after the Vietnam War, and we were kind of making kissy faces at the Soviet Union over the Berlin Wall and stuff like that. But I remember there was a little line in there where the Baron Harkonnen sends all of his troops and all these Imperial troops, and they bring these guild spaceships and this huge army to come in to overthrow the Atreides, and the Baron makes this comment that like they're going to need to double spice production for the next 300 years in order to pay for this war. And I remember as this college student kind of sitting up and going, what? You mean you have to pay for a war? I mean, it never occurred to me that you had to find the money to send the ships to build the weapons and everything else. I guess maybe we should hope that other people realize you have to pay for wars too, but let's not get off on politics. So.
Yeah, that's a very important thing about the economy of war, but mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a little political.
There's another, we can do that, and like I said, Navigators of Dune is out in paperback now, or Tales of Dune is the newest one. Let's see, another big project that I've got going is with my good friend and your good friend, Stephen L. Sears. Who used to be the executive producer of Xena Warrior Princess, and Steve and I have known mm-hmm. each other for, oh my gosh, 25 years or something like that. And we've come up with a really cool graphic novel project called Stalag X, and it's basically human prisoners in an alien POW camp in a future war, and you know, like Stalag 17 and The Great Escape, and they're trapped on this planet and evil alien prison commandants and stuff. So that's a cool thing, and we've got a shopping agreement out, and people are trying to generate some film interest. But the comics themselves will be out in one nice graphic novel from The Vault, which is a really big new publisher, and we expect that to be released sometime next March for, we hope, Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle. See, I'm still doing conventions. I'll be up there.
You are still doing conventions.
Next.
Well, so when's it coming out again? I'm sorry.
Next March is the last that we've heard, but you know, we've written it and the art's already done, and we're doing some fine tuning, and In fact, right now, Stephen and I are doing a short story that is sort of the background of one of the characters as bonus material for the graphic novel. So just another one of the balls that we're juggling in the air.
Cool. All right, we have a caller. I don't know if it's the same person, but we'll give it a shot.
Let's try the caller again.
Hello,
hi,
caller. Can I have your name where you're calling from?
Yes, this is Matt from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, Matt. I'm glad you got through.
Yeah, I was the one earlier, by the way. My phone just cut out, but I thought I'd try again. Glad to see I got through.
Sure. What can I do for you, Matt?
So my question is, I'm doing NaNoWriMo for the first time, and that's a lot of fun. But when I'm completed with it, would you recommend self-publishing over a more traditional route for publishers, or...
Well, let me do it. NaNoWriMo is this great thing called basically National Novel Writing in a Month or something like that, where all kinds of aspiring writers take this challenge that they can write a novel, something like 50,000 words is a minimum, and they can do it in a month. And a lot of people are doing it, and it really proves to yourself that if you put your butt in the chair and your fingers on the keyboard and you really work at it, that gosh, you really can write a novel in a month or so. Now, to your question about whether you should self-publish or whether you should send to traditional publishers or to a mid-sized publishing house, the answer is yes, or maybe, or whatever you want. Because, you know, right, it used to be that getting a career in publishing, it was pretty much in lockstep, and you had an interstate freeway, and everybody followed the same route, and you knew how to get from point A to point B, that you had to write it, and then you had to get it all finished, and then you would find an agent, and then the agent would submit it to publishers, and then they would accept it, at which point they would edit it, and then work it through publication, and then you'd get out the traditional route, and you'd have books in Barnes & Noble and Borders and regular bookstores and stuff. And that is actually still an option, and I still do that with a lot of my books. I'm what they call a hybrid author because I do it both the traditional way or the indie way. One of the problems with that process is if you're writing a book now, Matt, and you're finishing it in a month because you're doing it NaNoWriMo, and then you send it out somewhere, finding an agent will take you months or maybe a year, and then he'll send it out, it'll take months or maybe a year, and then the publisher accepts it, and they'll take a year or more to get it released. So it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. Well, of course, if you're into writing as a get-rich-quick scheme, then you're probably in the wrong business anyway.
Yeah.
But, so if you do it yourself, as in you publish it on Kindle or all ebook platforms, and you can produce print books now. There's a lot of ways that you can do that. You can do your own audiobooks. That's all a possibility. But one thing that I can't emphasize enough is that you are going from being a writer to being a writer and an editor and a book designer and a publisher and an art director and a marketing person. You are becoming way more than just being a writer, and not everybody is up on that. And I get exhausted myself just trying to keep up with the things that I already know how to do. And there are so many extra facets to it, but a lot of people have figured it out, and a lot of people are doing really well with it. But caution number two on it: don't just write your NaNoWriMo book and finish it at the end of November and go, gee, my mom liked it, it's ready to go. It's probably not ready to go. You need to do all of the things that a publishing house would do for you, as in you need to have it edited, and there are contract editors. You need to have all kinds of you need to make it as good as it can be. You can't just write a draft and put it up there because it's probably not ready for prime time unless you're a genius. And if you are a genius, Matt, then Sherry will probably want to have you on the show in the next week or so. So that is something that you need to keep in mind. And there are lots of other services that will do cover design for you and book design, and they'll help you upload it onto the platforms. All of that is great, but you got to pay for all of that. So if you sell a book to, say, Bantam Books, they pay for all of that. They take care of all that, and they pay you for the book in the first place.
Right.
Of course, you're waiting 3 or 4 years to get anything out. On the other hand, if you have to pay an editor, you have to pay a proofreader, you have to pay a cover designer, you have to pay a book designer, I'm not telling you one or the other, because I do both of them myself.
Mm-hmm.
There are some books that I do through Tor Books is pretty much my main publisher these days, but also through WordFire Press, I just released Tales of Dune, and that's how I'm releasing Tastes Like Chicken, the new Dan Chambell book, and that's how we put together Working Stiff, all the Dan Chambell short stories. There are books that I think I can do better myself, and in fact, the books that I've got going through Tor right now, in fact, I just got an offer last week, and I'll be looking at it, are these giant epic fantasies, kind of like Robert Jordan and Terry Goodkind and Brandon Sanderson, and those are the kind of books that I feel that they can do better, because they're big doorstop books, and I want to see them in Barnes & Nobles. So that's a choice that I made. And for you, of course, one of the things that you have to keep in mind is don't start worrying about what to publish your book until you've got it written. And a lot of people who start in NaNoWriMo kind of fizzle out in the middle. You're not, of course, because you're all inspired and you've talked to me and Sherry, so now you're going to charge out and finish your book. But I've had people, like, literally I've had people knocking on my door at my house, and they'd go, I want to be a writer, so how do I get an agent? And I'd go, well, have you written anything yet? And they'd say, no, but I want to get an agent. And I said, well, you know, you're a few steps ahead of things. And you know, so make sure that you write the book first and write the best book that you possibly can and get it as polished as you can make it so that it is ready for prime time. And then start looking for your possibilities. And there are many podcasts you can listen to of indie writers so that you can get a good grasp on, you know, what they're doing. One I'll recommend is called The Creative Pen with two N's. Her name is Joanna Penn, and she's like really does some great advice every single week. There's the Science Fiction and Fantasy Marketing Podcast. That's another one that has some pretty good information on it. Anyway, you have a lot of homework to do.
Writers groups on Facebook.
There's tons of writers groups on Facebook. Of course, you got to be careful to consider the source. I mean, if you have a bunch of people who don't know what they're doing and they're sharing their knowledge, you might not want to listen to it too much. But I think the upshot of all of this is
to bounce it off. So,
right. Well, I guess the upshot is that writing the book is like the fun part. And once you're done writing the book, then it becomes a lot more challenging, and you have to figure out what you're doing. And if you decide to go the traditional route of finding an agent or even just mailing it, there are some publishers that will just let you mail it. Like Bain Books, I think, will let you mail it in, and I think even Tor Books will let you mail it in. But if you do that, it's like you're shipping the box of the Ark of the Covenant into a warehouse, and you never know when you're going to see something coming out the other end. So the way that you distract yourself is by writing another novel, and then you write another novel, and you write another novel, and get yourself better.
The other thing is that once you're published, that's not the end.
I thought I was done. I could relax now.
Yeah, right. That's why you're on my show. Once you're published, even if you're with a publisher, because I've done both too, you got to promote your book. You have to go to conventions. You have to do signings. You have to go on shows like mine. There's a lot. It's actually harder to sell the book than it is to write the book.
Well, because nowadays everybody's published their book and everybody's telling you to buy my book. So everybody needs to learn to read faster so they buy more books. I think that's the solution to all the problems.
Oh, that's speed reading classes.
I hope that was I hope that was at least a little bit helpful, Matt. So I think the hard part is getting your book written. Make sure that you get that part done.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, start doing lots of homework and figuring out which route might be best for you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your answer. That was more information than I could have even hoped for. So, all right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
I hope it was helpful, Matt.
It was. Thank you so much. I'll continue listening to the show.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, we're back. There we go.
Yeah, the phone went a little weird. So you said Borders. Borders doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. What I was saying was that in the old days, you had all these bookstores, and you had, I mean, you had Borders, and Barnes and Noble were the big ones, but there were Books a Million and Hastings and
mm-hmm.
Bookstar was another one, and Crown Books was another one.
Yeah,
so there used to be huge bookstores all over the place, but you know, imagine if you were a band and you just produced your first CD and you want to get it sold. How many people are buying CDs in music stores anymore? Do they even exist? I don't think they do exist. I mean, of course,
I know.
There are other routes that we have available to you, but the whole world has changed as far as publishing and reading and writing has gone, and it's exciting, but it's also exhausting because
mm-hmm.
10 years ago, I thought I knew how to do everything. I was on this nice path, and I had all these book contracts, and everything was going great. And then suddenly it was, oh, well, I felt like I had invested in a whole chain of Blockbuster video stores, and how many of those are still around? So everything changes. And remember, I'm one of the guys that works in the Dune universe, so we've learned these things that you have to adapt or die. And I frankly don't want to have to go and get a real job, so I have to figure out how to adapt and make my writing career still work.
That's something that's really interesting to me, I actually really miss going into a neighborhood, not big, just a neighborhood bookstore, and browsing. Because most of the one I lived in L.A., almost all the ones I loved are gone. There's only like two or three here in San Diego, and you have to drive pretty far to get to them. I miss that. I miss being able to go to a bookstore and just talk to somebody who knows about books and who works there, not some teenager who's at Barnes
yeah.
& Noble.
But it's almost becoming more of a boutique experience. I mean, if you want to go and sit in a bookstore and be surrounded by books and talk to somebody who knows about books and get a recommendation for them, there are lots of independent bookstores that are catering to that need. But I myself live out in the mountains, and it's a half an hour drive to get to my nearest bookstore, which is a Barnes & Noble. And if I know what I want, if I know that I want the new Terry Goodkind novel, or if I know that I want the new Stephen King novel, I hate to like be pushing the big kahuna here, but you know, we go on Amazon, you order it, and it shows up on our doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
that's great if you know what you want. And Amazon is pretty good at recommending, oh, well, if you liked this one, you might like that one. So
mm-hmm.
you can browse and look around, and we all do know that there were problems with the bookstores that you'd walk in and go, oh, that looks like a really interesting series. They don't have book two. And, you know, they're
Ooh.
And on Amazon, you're never missing book two because they always list everything. So not that I'm cheerleading for everybody to only go buy through Amazon, although I make a lot of sales through Amazon.
Me too.
There are different needs, and I think bookstores will be catering more toward the customer that loves books and just wants to be around them and pick things up and look at them and talk to other book readers, and those will be the ones that have the coffee shop in the store and the readings for the authors. Now to get back to when I was talking about doing all the conventions and things, before that, I was going around doing book signing tours. I would go from bookstore to bookstore, and you'd do a little reading or a talk, and you'd meet your fans, and then maybe 20 of them or 30 of them would come in, and you'd sign books for them, and all of that is great. But so many bookstores have gone away that the idea of doing a book signing tour is more problematic now. However, when I go to Dallas Comic Con, I'll see 80,000 people that are flowing through, and they're all self-identified fans. They might not be all fans of mine, but they're fans of science fiction, fantasy, movies, comics, games. They're like the right kind of people that might walk by and see me standing there with a Dan Shamble book, or with a Saga of Seven Sons book, or the Dragon Business book, or something I have, and that's a great way to meet fans and make them. So as one opportunity dwindles away, there's another opportunity that comes up, because I don't think people are going to stop reading. There's always going to be a bunch of people who are nerds like us, and I'm meaning every single listener of your show, because you're self-defined nerds or you wouldn't be listening to this show. And you'll want to have things to read. You'll want to have things to watch. And so, again, I'll make the plug. Go on wordfire.com and sign up for my readers group, and you get a bunch of free stuff, and I'll free books and free stories, and keep your fix going so that you can get some more things going on.
It's true, though. When I first started writing with my first book that I published, it was book signings. But now it's mostly conventions that you don't really, there's not enough bookstores. In fact, the first time I met you was at your book signing here in San
Diego.
Right,
at Mysterious Galaxy, I think it was, right? You came
yep.
to Mysterious Galaxy Bookstore, and they used to be one of our, and they still are one of our biggest supporters as far as an independent bookstore. And anybody in the San Diego area, go to that store. It's a great store. It's got all kinds of wonderful books there, and they have lots of author events. And that's a great place to get books. But if you're an indie published author, to get back to Matt's question that was going on before, you have your own books, and you also have to be the bookseller. You've got to print your own books, and you carry them around with you, and you do library talks, and you have your own little cash register, and you sell your print books for $15 a piece, and they cost you $5 a piece, but then you also had to pay $2 shipping, and then you have to pay sales tax, there's a lot of pain in the butt stuff that goes along with doing this, and you know, some people like me long for the old days when I had to just write the book and send it in, and then I'd go back and write the next book, and now I'm wearing, like I said, lots of different hats, and I don't have enough heads.
12 different hats.
Yes. But like you said at the beginning, we've all got tiny little heads, so maybe that's how they
all
think
about it. Didn't mean it literally. And I actually meant my own.
Good. All right. So what haven't
anyway,
we covered yet? We've still got some time. What haven't we covered yet? Any other callers? Be sure to call in. You want to tell them the number if they're listening?
If you're listening, the number is 646-915-9580, and press 1 if you want to talk to Kevin. How's that?
That sounds good. And if you don't press 1, then why did you call in? I don't know.
Exactly.
So, lots of other stuff. Let's see. So, you know, I'm multi-processing all the time, so I'm like typing up notes while I was on hold before the show started, working with Brian Herbert on some comments of another story we've got going, and I sent Stephen Sears an outline for our Stalag X story, and my wife Rebecca is sending me drafts for emails of our next newsletter that's going to go out, and I'm fragmented. That's all it is. So, but this coming weekend,
right?
This coming weekend, I'm going to be the writer in residence at this writer's retreat in the mountains of Utah. So I'm looking forward to flying out there and being all at peace in this big house that has 30 other writers in there, all of them working away, and you'd think they might chat all the time, but they look at one person and they go, oh, well, he's writing, so I better shut up and get back to writing myself. It'll be an interesting experience. I hope I get a lot done.
So my friend Mary Brooks went to one of those up in Northern California, I think, and she was saying how great it was. She goes, I just do my thing, and then they're all doing stuff, and I can go and lay out in the sun or go swim in the pool.
Well, I've done it once before at this same group, and so every night we'll get together for dinner, and then afterwards I will talk about some aspect. I'll probably be talking about collaborations or some other stuff right now, and they get to ask questions, but that's like the public time, and after that we go, all right, everybody be quiet now and go hide in your corners or out in the porch or wherever you want to go and do some writing. One thing that occurs to me because of Matt's call, and he mentioned about NaNoWriMo, and again, I'll mention that this is very popular. I don't know how many millions of people participate in it every year, but it's this challenge, and for the month of November, you get busy and you try to write the novel you've always wanted to write. But one thing that we do every year is I put together a story bundle, which is basically a grab bag of a whole bunch of e-books on various subjects. And every October, I put together a NaNoWriMo story bundle about books that writers might find useful for writing their books. And I've got one. It's storybundle.com, so it's not hard to remember. And there's, I think, 14 books in it that I wrote one about collaboration. There's somebody else who wrote about making a career in writing. There's other people about write about contracts, and there's some very useful things on how to use Excel to track your word count and track your story submissions, and how to use Scrivener, which is another writing software tool, and it's very useful. And you name your own price. It's like the William Shatner Priceline thing. It's anything. There's a minimum price for it to get the whole batch, but you get all of those books delivered to you, and there should be something useful in there. And that only runs until the end of the month, I think. So if you are a writer and you're interested in various aspects of publishing and writing, and I'm talking to you, Matt, because you're still listening, it's storybundle.com, and pick the NaNoWriMo tools bundle and just look at all the cool stuff that's on there. Lots of good books, and there should be something really useful there. There's like a plot outlining workbooks in there, and there's one about hurting your characters. It's all describing different types of wounds and how to describe them and how to treat them. So it's not meant to be a first aid book, but if you're beating your characters up in your story, you kind of want to know how to hurt them and how they can survive. So not the sort of thing that makes for good dinner table conversation. But
no, not unless it has a doctor's. I have a lot of new writers that listen to my show, like Matt. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what a bundle is and exactly how that works?
Sure. Well, a bundle, I'm the curator on this one in particular. So I run around and I get other writers to give me their e-books for the bundle. And I think this one has 14 of them in there, and we all put these things together, and you buy the bundle, and you pay for it whatever you want. I think the minimum is like $15 for the 14 books, so you're getting about $150 worth of books for $15, and they will mail you or email you instantly once you pay your preference, whether it's ebook or Mobi, depending on what kind of e-reader you have. And you'll instantly get all 15 of these books that, again, one, mine's on collaboration, and there's one on how to use Vellum, which is a book design software, one on how to use Scrivener and how to hurt your characters with wounds and all these different things. So just go to storybundle.com and say that, you know, I'm generous. I think this is worth $25, and so that's what you pay for it, and you get it. And all the money gets split up among these authors, and we're all indie authors, and we put them together. So we're, you know, desperately trying to get a dollar here and a dollar there for our books. And a portion of the money goes to a nonprofit organization. And my particular charity that I always support is the Challenger Learning Centers. They really help encourage kids to get into science and engineering and space science so that, they're going to save our world someday and we want them to grow up smart. So it's a really good cause. I'm very supportive of it. Doesn't have a lot to do with writing, but that just happens to be my charity. And you go on storybundle.com and pick the bundle, and even if you don't read them all, it's still a really good bargain, and you can get some great information out of it. And it only runs till the end of this month, I think, and then it all comes down, and you never get it again. So, good. Well, I mean, you can go buy the books individually, but then you're going to pay $150 or something for them. So, take advantage, get all these writing tools, and see what's out there, and. Don't read so many books that you don't get around to writing your stuff for NaNoWriMo. But
exactly.
There's a good balance.
We're coming to the end. Is there a convention or anything online coming up that you can meet the fans that you want to tell anybody about? Or do you want to just give your website address, whatever you want? This is your time.
Right. Well, I think that the main thing is if you just sign up for the readers group at wordfire.com, because then I'll be telling everybody I'm at this convention next month, or here's how you can. And for the people on that group, I might even set up, we'll get together for breakfast or something so I can have a more personal touch with people. But that'll be a great place for you to keep track of where I'm going. Like I said, I'm kind of taking a break for a couple of months to get writing done. So my next real convention is in February. And that's sort of what we want you to do. The Dan Chambell book, Tastes Like Chicken, will be up for pre-order in about a week, so you can check on that one. But in the meantime, get your copy of Working Stiff for free and have a look at all of them.
Cool. And also Kevin's going to take part in my annual Christmas book fair on Christmas Day, so he may have a couple little things in there for you guys.
I'll
right?
put that in. Oh, and there is one. I mean, I keep throwing so many things. I'm sure everybody's busily scribbling down URLs and stuff like that. But just like you, Sherry, I've realized I have too much free time on my hand, and I need other things to do. So, about a month and a half ago, I launched my own podcast called Creative Futurism, creativefuturism.com, and it's me and this. Big financial tech guru. His name is John Best. So it's almost like Crossfire. We do it's creativity, business, technology, and the future. And we talk about changes in society and technology and unintended consequences. And we've got, I believe, 5 episodes are up now. There's several more in the can. And the first episode was with the drummer from legendary rock band Jethro Tull, and he's talking about the changes in the music industry. And then we had Mark Lefebvre, who was the head of Kobo, one of the competitors of Kindle, and he talks about the Industrial Revolution and reading and publishing and book distributing. And we had the guy who invented the Starbucks payment app for the smartphones, which was the first, like, real payment app, and he talks about the future of money and payments. And we have Doug Beeson, who's a PhD physicist and an Air Force colonel, who talks about, like, science fiction weapons that the Air Force is working on, like force fields and stun guns and things like that. So creativefuturism.com, it's free, just listen to it. And I'm sorry I plugged so many different things. I've got too many hats, like I said. But most of them don't cost you any money, so you can check them out and see what you like. So I hope something there seems of interest to you.
I'm sure everything seems of interest. We've come to the end. Thank you so much, Kevin. I really always enjoy talking to you.
Well, just be sure to remind me at least once a year, and I'll be happy to come back on. So thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by listeners like you. You can support this program by leaving a rating or a review at iTunes, at Sherry's Patreon account, patreon.com/readthebard, or by following Sherry on all the various social media at readthebard. That's RITHEBARD. Once again, that's readthebard. RITHEBARD. BARD. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.